Chapter 2. One snowy afternoon, Joe was in the garden, sweeping snow from the path. The garden next door belonged to Mr. Lawrence. The two gardens were separated by a low hedge. On one side was the March's house, an old brown house covered with vines and flowers. On the other side was Mr. Lawrence's house. It was a big stone house, full of comfort and luxury. But there were no children that ran around in the garden, and no motherly face that smiled at the windows. It looked lonely and lifeless. Joe was curious about this house. She wanted to see the beauties and the luxuries inside. She also wanted to get to know the Lawrence boy. She had not seen him since the party, so Joe thought that he had gone away. As Joe was clearing the snow away, she looked up at the Lawrence house. The house looked quiet, and the curtains were down. Then she saw a black head at the upper window. "There he is," thought Joe. "Poor boy, all alone on this depressing day." She made a snowball and threw it at the window. The head turned. The big eyes brightened, and the mouth smiled. "How are you?" Joe shouted as she smiled. "Are you sick?" Laurie opened the window. "I'm feeling better, thank you. I've had a bad cold and have been at home all week. I am really bored." "Get someone to come and see you then." "There isn't anyone I'd like to see. I don't have many friends."
"You have us."
"Yes, I do. Will you come, please?" Joe ran back home to ask Mother's permission. A few minutes later, she was in the sitting room with Laurie. She had a cake in one hand and three kittens in the other. "Mother sent her love," she said. "Meg wanted me to bring you some of her cake, and Beth sent her cats." They talked and laughed. Soon, Laurie's shyness had disappeared, and he was feeling much better. He said he was lonely and often watched the sisters from his window. "You always seem to be having a good time," he said. "Sometimes at night, you all sit around the table with your mother. Her face is so sweet. I haven't got any mother, you know." Joe saw that Laurie was sick and lonely. She felt that she was lucky because she had a loving family. She wanted to share it with him. "Well, you should come over and see us. Mother is wonderful. Beth will sing to you and Amy will dance. Meg and I will make you laugh and we'll have a good time. Would your grandpa let you come?" "I think he would, if your mother asked him. He's very kind, and he lets me do what I like. You see, Grandpa lives among his books. Mr. Brooke, my teacher, doesn't live here, and I have no one to spend time with." Joe told him about her job with Aunt March. She described the old lady, her fat little dog, the parrot that talked Spanish, and the library. She made Laurie laugh so much that the maid came in to see what the matter was. Then Joe told him about their plays, their hopes and fears for Father, and stories about her sisters. Like Joe, Laurie loved reading too, so they talked about books for a long time. Then Laurie took Joe downstairs to his grandfather's library. The library was full of books, pictures, statues, and strange furniture. Joe loved it. "How wonderful," she said, as she sat down into one of the chairs. "Laurie, you must be the happiest boy in the world," she said. Suddenly, the doorbell rang and Joe got up. "Oh no, it's your grandpa." "Well, what if it is? You are not afraid of him, are you?" "I think I am a little bit afraid of him." It was the doctor who had arrived to check on Laurie. Laurie said he would see him and come back in 5 minutes. Laurie went away and Jo was alone in the library. She was standing in front of a portrait of old Mr. Lawrence when the door opened again. Without turning, Jo said, "I shouldn't be afraid of your grandpa. He's got kind eyes. He isn't as handsome as my grandfather, but I like him." "Thank you," said a voice behind her. It was Mr. Lawrence. Jo turned red, and her heart began to beat fast. She wanted to run away, but she decided to stay. Then she looked at the old man's face and saw that he really did have kind eyes. "So, you are not afraid of me?"
"Not much, sir."
"And you don't think I'm as handsome as your grandfather?"
"No, sir. But you like me."
"Yes, I do, sir." The old gentleman laughed and shook her hand. He looked into her face. "Your grandfather and I were friends. You are very much like him." He was a brave and honest man.
"Thank you, sir," said Jo.
She was quite comfortable after that. "You think my grandson needs friends?" asked the old gentleman.
"Yes, sir.
He seems a little lonely. Me and my sisters would like to help if we can. We don't forget the wonderful Christmas present you sent us."
"Oh, that was my grandson's idea."
Then he asked about the Hummel family. Jo told him how the poor mother and her children were doing. He said he would like to visit Mrs. March one day. Then he looked at the clock and said it was tea time and invited Jo for some tea. As they were walking to the sitting room arm in arm, Laurie came down the stairs. He was surprised to see them.
"I didn't know you'd come, sir," he said.
"I can see that," said Mr. Lawrence. "Now come have tea with us." The three of them had tea together. The old gentleman did not say much as he drank his tea, but he watched the two young people. They were talking like old friends. His grandson had changed. There was colour and life in his face now. He looked active and happy. He knew that Jo was right. His grandson was lonely and needed friends. After tea, Laurie took Jo to the conservatory and cut some flowers. He tied them up. "Please give these to your mother," he said. Then they went into the drawing room. Mr. Lawrence was in front of the fireplace. Jo saw a grand piano in the middle of the room.
"Do you play?"
she asked Laurie.
"Sometimes," he said.
"Please play now. I want to hear it, so I can tell Beth." So Laurie played and Jo listened. Her respect for Laurie increased very much. He played very well. She wished Beth could hear him. She praised Laurie. Then she said she had to go back home.
"Are you leaving, young lady?" said the old gentleman.
"Thank you for visiting us. I hope you'll come again. My respects to your mother. Good night." Jo and Laurie went into the hall.
"You will come again, I hope," said Laurie.
"If you promise to come and see us after you get better."
"I will."
"Good night, Laurie." "Good night, Jo." "Good night." Jo went home and told the family about the afternoon's adventures. Everyone wanted to go visit Laurie and his grandfather. Mrs. March wanted to talk about her father with the old men who had not forgotten him. Meg wanted to walk in the conservatory. Beth wanted to see the grand piano, and Amy wanted to see the pictures and statues in the library. After that day, the March family visited the big house frequently. Old Mr. Lawrence said something funny or kind to each one of the girls and talked about old times with their mother. Nobody was afraid of him anymore, except shy Beth. At first, the girls felt uncomfortable because Laurie was rich
and offered them many things that they could not return. But soon they found out that Lorry was grateful to them. He was happy about Mrs. March's motherly welcome and the girls' friendship. He felt comfortable in their home. Everyone liked Lorry, and he loved being with them. He was tired of books and studying, and his teacher, Mr. Brooke, complained that he ran away to the Marches frequently and missed classes. "Let him take a holiday," said the old gentleman. "Mrs. March says he is studying too hard and needs to spend time with friends. She is right. Let him do what he likes. Mrs. March is doing more for him than we can." They had good times together. They acted in plays, went sleighing and skating, and had little parties at the big house. Meg could go to the conservatory and look at the flowers. Jo spent time at the library, and Amy copied pictures. Lorry enjoyed being the host of the house, but Beth was too shy to go to the big house and look at the grand piano. She was frightened of the old gentleman, who looked at her under his big eyebrows. Mr. Lawrence heard about Beth's shyness. When he visited the Marches' home, he talked about music and told stories about some of the great singers. Beth listened to him in a fascinated way. One day, he turned to Mrs. March and said, "Lorry doesn't practice music nowadays. I am worried about the piano. Would one of your girls come over and practice on it sometimes, ma'am? They don't have to speak to anyone. They can come in at any time. I am always in my study, and Lorry is generally out. No one will hear them play the piano." Beth stepped forward. She was very excited. "Oh, sir, I would like to play your piano," she said shyly. "Do you like music?" the old gentleman asked. "I love it, and I'll come. Are you sure that nobody will hear me and be disturbed?" "No one, my dear. The house is empty half the day, so come whenever you like." "You are very kind, sir." Beth was not frightened now and squeezed his hand. The old gentleman softly stroked her hair and bent down and kissed her. "I had a little girl once with eyes like these," he said, and he went away. The next day, Beth went to the great house and quietly walked into the drawing room. She saw the piano. Her hands were shaking. She was worried that someone might see her. She stopped to listen and looked around. At last, she touched the instrument. It was like the voice of a friend she loved. She played until Hannah came to take her home to dinner. Beth was very happy that day. After that, Beth went next door and played the piano nearly every day. She never knew that Mr. Lawrence opened his study door to hear her play. She never knew that Lorry would wait outside the room to send the servants away. She never knew that the exercise books and the new songs on the piano were put there especially for her. She was very happy and grateful. "Mother, I'm going to make a pair of slippers for Mr. Lawrence. He is so kind to me. I must thank him. And I don't know any other way. Can I do it?" she asked a few weeks later. "Yes, dear. He will like it very much." "The girls will help you," said Mrs. March. Together with Meg and Jo, Beth chose the pattern and bought the materials. Then she began working on the slippers. She worked on them early in the morning and late at night, and soon they were finished. Then she wrote a note to Mr. Lawrence. Lorry helped her put the slippers and the note onto Mr. Lawrence's table one morning. Beth waited to see what would happen. Nothing happened that day. On the afternoon of the second day, as she was walking back home from town, she saw that her sisters were waving their hands from the windows. She ran inside and saw a little piano in the room. There was a letter lying on it. Beth turned pale with happiness and surprise. Isn't it wonderful? Don't you think he is the nicest old man in the world? Cried Jo and hugged her sister. She gave her the note. Read it, please. I can't. Oh, it is so lovely, said Beth. Jo opened the letter and began reading. Dear Miss March, I have had many pairs of slippers in my life, but your slippers are the best. I am sending you something which belonged to the little granddaughter I lost a long time ago. Thank you very much. Best wishes. Your good friend, James Lawrence. Beth was shaking with excitement. Beth, Laurie told me Mr. Lawrence used to love the granddaughter who died, and he kept all her little things. Just think, he's giving you her piano, said Jo. Try it, honey, said Mrs. March. Let's hear the sound of the baby piano. Beth played it, and everyone said it was the most wonderful piano. I have to go and thank him, Beth said afterwards. I'll go now, before I get frightened. She walked down the garden and to the Lawrence's door. She went into the house and to the study. She knocked at the door and went in. She approached Mr. Lawrence, who looked surprised, and held his hand. I came to thank you, sir, she said. She put both arms round his neck and kissed him. The old gentleman was very happy. He felt like his own granddaughter was back with him again. From that day on, Beth stopped being frightened of him. That day, the old gentleman walked with her to her own gate, shook her hand, and touched his hat as he walked back again. The girls saw this from the window. They were all very surprised and happy. One Saturday afternoon, Amy walked into the room. Girls, where are you going? She asked. Jo and Meg were getting ready to go out. Little girls shouldn't ask questions, said Jo. Amy turned to Meg. Please tell me. Let me go with you. Beth is playing the piano, and I don't have anything to do. I'm lonely. You can't, dear, because you are not invited, said Meg. You can't go, Amy, so don't be a baby, said Jo. You are going somewhere with Laurie, said Amy. Yes, we are. Now stop bothering us. I know, you're going to the theatre to see the Seven Castles, she cried. I want to go with you. Mother said I could see it. Just listen to me a minute, dear, said Meg. You can go next week with Beth and Hannah. But I want to go with you and Laurie. Please let me. I've been sick with this cold for a long time, and I'm dying for some fun. Please, Meg. Perhaps we can take her. Mother wouldn't mind if she puts on warm clothes, said Meg. If she goes, I won't go, and if I don't go, Laurie won't like it. It will be very rude to bring Amy, because he invited only us, said Jo. Amy was angry. She began to put her boots on. I will go, she said. No, you are not going, said Jo. Amy began to cry, and Meg tried to talk to her. Then Laurie called from below, and the two girls ran downstairs. As they were leaving, Amy shouted, You'll be sorry for this, Jo March. Jo laughed and slammed the door. They had a great time at the theatre. The play was wonderful, but Jo was thinking about her sister. She wondered what Amy would do to make her sorry. Amy and Jo had had small arguments before. They both had quick tempers. Jo was older, but she had little self-control. Her anger did not last long, and she would become an angel afterward. She tried to be a good person, but she could not control her anger. When they got home, Amy was reading. She remained quiet and did not ask them about the play. The next day, Late in the afternoon, Meg, Beth and Amy were sitting together. Suddenly, Joe came into the room. She looked excited. "Has anyone taken my book?" she asked. It was the little storybook that she was working on. Meg and Beth said, "No," and looked surprised. Amy said nothing. Joe looked at her. "Amy, you've got it." "No, I haven't." "You know where it is, then." "No, I don't." "That's a lie," cried Joe. "I haven't got it. I don't know where it is, and I don't care." "You know something about it. Tell me now." "You'll never see your silly old book again," cried Amy. "I burned it up." "What? The little book I worked on for such a long time? I wanted to finish writing it before Father got home. Have you really burnt it?" Joe turned pale. "Yes, I did. I told you I'd make you pay for being so mean to me yesterday." "You wicked, wicked girl. I never can write it again. I'll never forgive you as long as I live." When Mrs. March came home and heard the story, she talked to Amy. Amy understood the wrong she had done to her sister. The book was very important to Jo. It was a storybook of fairy tales. She had been working on it for several years. She was hoping to get it printed one day. It was the only copy she had. Mrs. March looked serious and sad, and Amy knew that she had to apologize for the terrible thing she had done. At tea time, Joe appeared. She looked very sad and distant. Amy took a deep breath. "Please forgive me, Joe. I'm very, very sorry." "I will never forgive you," said Joe. From that moment, she ignored Amy. It was not a happy evening for the family. When Mrs. March went to say goodnight to Joe that night, she said, "My dear, don't let your anger take control. Forgive each other, help each other, and begin again tomorrow." Joe was deeply hurt and knew that she could not forgive yet. "She did something terrible. I won't forgive her," she said, and went to bed. The next day was a very cold day. Joe was still very angry, and nothing went well all day. She was very unhappy. "I'll ask Laurie to go skating with me. He is always kind and cheerful. I'll feel better," thought Joe. Amy saw Joe leaving with her skates. "Look," she said to Meg. "She promised she would take me skating with her. This is the last ice we'll have this year. But I can't ask her." "You were very naughty, but I think she might forgive you now," said Meg. "Go after them. Wait until Joe looks happy and cheerful, and then go and kiss her. I'm sure she will forgive you." Amy liked this advice. She got ready and went after Joe and Laurie. The river was not very far. Joe and Laurie were skating when Amy reached them. Joe saw her coming and turned her back. Laurie did not see her. He was skating slowly and carefully and listening to the ice. The weather had gotten warm, and the ice could be melting. It would be very dangerous to skate on melting ice. Joe saw Amy running towards them and putting her skates on, but she did not go and help her. She ignored her sister and went slowly down the river. "Keep near the shore. It is not safe in the middle," shouted Laurie. Joe heard this, but Amy did not. Joe looked at Amy and still did not go to her. Amy was now on the ice, skating towards the middle of the frozen river. Joe stood still with a strange feeling in her heart. Then she decided to go on, but something made her turn around and look at Amy. Then she saw the crash of the ice and Amy going down into the cold water. Joe was frozen. She tried to call Laurie, but her voice was gone. She tried to go to Amy, but her feet did not move. Then she saw Laurie go to Amy. "Bring a rail, quick, quick." Laurie was calm. He gave instructions and Jo obeyed them with all her strength. Together they got the child out. She was more frightened than hurt. "We must walk her home as fast as we can." "Put all of our things on her," cried Laurie. He took off his skates with difficulty. Amy was cold, wet and scared. They got her home, put her in front of the fireplace and covered her with blankets. After some time, she finally fell asleep. Jo looked pale and cold. Her dress was torn and her hands were cut and bruised. The house was now quiet and Mrs. March was sitting by the bed. Jo went to her. She bandaged her hands. "Are you sure she is safe?" asked Jo as she looked at her sister. "Yes, dear. She is not hurt and won't get sick. Mother, if she died, it would be my fault." Jo started crying. "It's my anger. I try to control it, but then it comes back. Oh, Mother, what will I do?" cried Jo. "Never stop trying. And know that you can correct your fault," said Mrs. March. She kissed her on the cheek. "You don't know. It is so bad. I feel like I could do anything when I'm angry. I could hurt anyone. I'm afraid I will do something terrible one day. Oh, Mother, help me." "I will, my child. Don't cry. Remember this day and promise yourself you will never have a day like this one. Jo, my dear, we all have our weaknesses. It often takes a lifetime to fix them. I used to have a very bad temper too." "You, Mother? But you are never angry." Jo was surprised. "I've been trying to deal with it for 40 years. I have recently succeeded in controlling it. I am angry nearly every day of my life, Jo, but I have learned not to show it. I hope I will learn not to feel it." Jo felt comforted by her mother's words. She now knew that her mother had a fault like hers and tried to mend it. Knowing this made it easier to deal with. "Mother, are you angry when you fold your lips tight together and go out of the room sometimes?" asked Jo. "Yes, I've learned not to say the words that come to my lips. When I feel that they may come out, I just go away for a minute," answered Mrs. March. "My mother used to help me with this problem, but I lost her when I was young. I had to struggle alone for years because I was too proud to talk about my weakness. Then I met your father and it was easy to be good with him. But later I had four little daughters and we were poor. So the old trouble began again. It was not easy to be calm, but your father helped me. He never loses patience or complains. He always hopes and works and waits. He helped and comforted me. I wanted to be the woman that my daughters copied. Your love and respect were my reward." "Oh, Mother, I'll be happy if I am half as good as you," cried Jo. "I hope you will be much better than me, dear. But you must watch your weakness, or it may spoil your life." "I will try, Mother, I will. But you must help me." Amy turned in her bed. Jo looked at her. "I will let go of my anger. I was not going to forgive her, and today it might have been too late. How could I be so mean?" said Jo. She leaned over her sister and touched the wet hair on the pillow. Amy opened her eyes, held out her arms and smiled. They did not say a word, but hugged each other.